Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Napoleon Hill's Outwitting the Devil, The Secret to Freedom and Success, by Napoleon Hill, edited and annotated by Sharon Lecter, performed by Dan John Miller and Phil Gigante.
Introduction by Sharon Lecter. Outwitting the Devil is the most profound book I have ever read. First, I was incredibly honored when Don Green, CEO of the Napoleon Hill Foundation, trusted me enough to ask me to become involved in this project. And then I read the manuscript. I couldn't sleep for a week. Written on a manual typewriter in 1938 by the master himself, Napoleon Hill, this manuscript had been locked away and hidden by Hill's family for 72 years. Why? Because they were frightened by the response it would invoke. Hill's courage in revealing the devil's work around each of us every day, in our churches, our schools, and our politics, threatened the very core of society as it was known at the time. When asked why the family had hidden the manuscript, Don Green recites the following inside story. It was the objections of Hill's wife, Annie Lou. She was secretary to Dr. William Plummer Jacobs, president of Presbyterian College in Clinton, South Carolina. Jacobs was also owner of Jacobs Press and a public counselor to a group of South Carolina textile firms. Jacobs hired Hill to come to Clinton to work for him, and Annie Lou did not want the book published because of the role of the devil. She feared the response from organized religion, and maybe for Hill's job. Even though Hill died in 1970, Annie Lou did not die until 1984. Upon Annie Lou's death, the manuscript came into the possession of Dr. Charlie Johnson, then the president of the Napoleon Hill Foundation. Charlie was the nephew of Annie Lou Hill. Charlie's wife, Frankie, knew and shared Annie Lou's feelings. Frankie told Charlie that she did not want the manuscript published while she was alive either. Charlie's wife passed away a couple of years ago, and Charlie finally gave me the manuscript, bound in red and embossed with the letters Outwitting the Devil in gold on the cover. The foundation believes the manuscript has a powerful message that needs to be shared. After speaking with Don, I was overcome with a powerful realization. This book, even though written in 1938, was actually meant to be published today. Meant to rock our society today. It was intended to provide answers during this uncertain economic and spiritual time. It provides the keys for each of us to outwit the devil in our own lives. It shows us how to chart a course for success and to add value to the world around us through the process. Just as Think and Grow Rich helped us recover and succeed after the Great Depression, Outwitting the Devil was written to help each of us recover and succeed today. You may ask if Hill believes his conversation with the devil was real or was it merely imaginary. The choice is yours. But I also asked Don Green about Hill's thoughts in his other writings to see if we could get another look inside Hill's head. Don's response was as follows. The use of imaginary conversations was not new to Hill. In 1953, Hill published How to Raise Your Own Salary, which was written as a conversation between Hill and Carnegie. Hill had actually interviewed Carnegie in 1908, and Carnegie died in 1919, well before his publication. This was not the first time Hill used imaginary meetings to convey what he was writing about. In Think and Grow Rich, Hill, writing about the Sixth Sense, wrote about his imaginary council meeting with the nine men whose life works had been the most impressive to Hill. These nine imaginary council members were Emerson, Paine, Edison, Darwin, Lincoln, Burbank, Napoleon, Ford, and Carnegie. Hill wrote in Think and Grow Rich that during his meetings with his invisible counselors, he found his mind most receptive to ideas, thoughts, and knowledge that reached him during these times when his sixth sense was activated. Outwitting the Devil was by no means his first time to write about religion. In fact, after he published Law of Success in 1928, he received letters of criticism about his stance on schools and religion. In Think and Grow Rich, in the chapter The Six Ghosts of Fear, Hill wrote that fear of death in the majority of cases, could be charged to religious fanaticism. Hill had much to say about religious leaders in this section of his classic bestseller. Hill had much to say about religion even in his Hill's Golden Rule magazine. He wrote an article, A Suggestion to Ministers of the Gospel, in which he admonished church leaders to teach their followers to practice harmony among each other. So the choice is yours. Did Hill actually talk to the devil, or is this a parable created to reach and touch your heart? Hill's unique style will pull you in and move you in ways you never thought possible. The words in this book are Hill's own. Since the original manuscript was quite lengthy, I edited with careful precision to preserve the profound impact of his message. I have kept his original language in place even when modern grammar may have dictated adjustments. In an effort to highlight certain issues, bring clarity to his words, and show how his predictions have become realities, I have added some thoughts throughout the manuscript. Please enjoy this powerful book and share it with your friends and family. The power in Hill's words can and will change your life. Sharon Lecter.
Chapter 1. My first meeting with Andrew Carnegie. For more than a quarter of a century, my major purpose has been that of isolating and organizing into a philosophy of achievement the causes of both failure and success, with the object of being helpful to others who have neither the inclination nor the opportunity to engage in this form of research. My labor began in 1908 as the result of an interview that I had with the late Andrew Carnegie. I frankly told Mr. Carnegie that I wished to enter law school and that I had conceived the idea of paying my way through school by interviewing successful men and women, finding out how they came by their success, and writing stories of my discoveries for magazines. At the end of our first visit, Mr. Carnegie asked whether or not I possessed enough courage to carry out a suggestion he wished to offer me. I replied that courage was about all I did have, and that I was prepared to do my best to carry out any suggestion he cared to offer. He then said, "Your idea of writing stories about men and women who are successful is commendable, as far as it goes, and I have no intention of trying to discourage you from carrying out your purpose. But I must tell you that if you wish to be of enduring service, not only to those now living, but to posterity as well, you can do so if you will take the time to organize all of the causes of failure as well as all of the causes of success. There are millions of people in the world who have not the slightest conception of the causes of success and failure. The schools and colleges teach practically everything except the principles of individual achievement. They require young men and women to spend from 4 to 8 years acquiring abstract knowledge, but do not teach them what to do with this knowledge after they get it. The world is in need of a practical, understandable philosophy of achievement, organized from the factual knowledge gained from the experience of men and women in the great university of life. In the entire field of philosophy, I find nothing which even remotely resembles the sort of philosophy which I have in mind. We have few philosophers who are capable of teaching men and women the art of living. It seems to me that here is an opportunity which should challenge an ambitious young man of your type. But ambition alone is not enough for this task which I have suggested. The one who undertakes it must have courage and tenacity. The job will require at least 20 years of continuous effort, during which the one who undertakes it will have to earn his living from some other source, because this sort of research is never profitable at the outset, and generally those who have contributed to civilization through work of this nature have had to wait 100 years or so after their own funerals to receive recognition for their labor.
20 years of labor with no pay and possibly no recognition? How would you respond to this offer? As he discusses later, Hill accepted Carnegie's challenge, and with a letter of introduction from Carnegie, set about interviewing the giants of that time, including Theodore Roosevelt, Thomas Edison, John D. Rockefeller, Henry Ford, Alexander Graham Bell, King Gillette, founder of the Gillette Safety Razor Company, and many others. His effort ultimately culminated in the publication of several books, including the 8-volume Law of Success and Think and Grow Rich, after more than 25 years of research. Think and Grow Rich is widely recognized as the seminal work in self-development, introducing essentially all the principles that continue to serve as the foundation for the teachings of the personal development gurus of today. As reflected in Hill's own description, the process of developing and publishing Think and Grow Rich was itself a study in the principles he revealed. It may be telling that the manuscript of Outwitting the Devil was written the year after Think and Grow Rich was published, since this work may reveal the frustration and revelation of Hill's other self, and how he conquered his frustrations and succeeded in using the very principles he described in Think and Grow Rich. Outwitting the Devil will reveal Hill's spiritual awakening and how each of us can learn from his encounter with the devil.
If you undertake this job, you should interview not only the few who have succeeded, but the many who have failed. You should carefully analyze many thousands of people who have been classified as failures, and I mean by the term failures, men and women who come to the closing chapter of life disappointed because they did not attain the goal which they had set their hearts upon achieving. As inconsistent as it may seem, you will learn more about how to succeed from the failures than you will from the so-called successes. They will teach you what not to do. Along toward the end of your labor, if you carry it through successfully, you will make a discovery which may be a great surprise to you. You will discover that the cause of success is not something separate and apart from the man, that it is a force so intangible in nature that the majority of men never recognize it, a force which might be properly called the other self. Noteworthy is the fact that this other self seldom exerts its influence or makes itself known, excepting at times of unusual emergency, when men are forced, through adversity and temporary defeat, to change their habits and to think their way out of difficulty. My experience has taught me that a man is never quite so near success as when that which he calls failure has overtaken him, for it is on occasions of this sort that he is forced to think. If he thinks accurately, and with persistence, he discovers that so-called failure usually is nothing more than a signal to rearm himself with a new plan or purpose. Most real failures are due to limitations which men set up in their own minds. If they had the courage to go one step further, they would discover their error.
Most real failures are due to limitations which men set up in their own minds. A negative mindset and self-doubt can be the primary obstacle to success. With the current economic downturn, far too many people who have all their life done everything right are now, for the first time, facing severe economic adversity. The greatest barrier to their recovery is their own fear and self-doubt instilled by their recent experience. Have you allowed the current economic downturn to overtake you? Have self-doubt and self-sabotage held you back from reaching your dreams? Are you your own worst enemy? In Think and Grow Rich, Hill told the story of R.U. Darby, a gold prospector. Frustrated when a rich vein of gold apparently ran out, Darby sold his gold claim for a pittance to the town junkman. The junkman brought in the right expert advisors and found that Darby would have rediscovered the vein had he moved his digging a mere 3 feet. Had Darby persevered, he would have made his fortune, but he gave up and abandoned his dreams when he was only 3 feet from gold. Rather than being crushed by his error, Darby learned from his experience and went on to build an insurance empire. Will you abandon your quest just before reaching great success when you are only 3 feet from gold? You can listen to how many of today's icons persevered through difficult situations in the book 3 Feet from Gold.
Begin life anew. Mr. Carnegie's speech reshaped my entire life and planted in my mind a burning purpose which has driven me ceaselessly, and this despite the fact that I had but a vague idea as to what he meant by the term other self. During my labor of research into the causes of failure and success, I have had the privilege of analyzing more than 25,000 men and women who were rated as failures, and over 500 who were classed as successful. Many years ago, I caught my first glimpse of that other self Mr. Carnegie had mentioned. The discovery came, as he said it would, as the result of two major turning points of my life, which constituted emergencies that forced me to think my way out of difficulties such as I had never before experienced. I wish it were possible to describe this discovery without the use of the personal pronoun, but this is impossible because it came through personal experiences from which it cannot be separated. To give you the complete picture, I shall have to go back to the first of these two major turning points and bring you up to the discovery, step by step. The research necessary for the accumulation of the data from which the 17 principles of achievement and the 30 major causes of failure were organized required years of labor. I had reached the false conclusion that my task of organizing a complete philosophy of personal achievement had been completed. Far from having been completed, my work had merely begun. I had erected the skeleton of a philosophy by organizing the 17 principles of achievement and the 30 major causes of failure, but that skeleton had to be covered with the flesh of application and experience. Moreover, it had to be given a soul through which it might inspire men and women to meet obstacles without going down under them. The soul, which had yet to be added, as I discovered later, became available only after my other self made its appearance, through two major turning points of my life. Resolving to turn my attention, and whatever talents I might possess, into monetary returns through business and professional channels, I decided to go into the profession of advertising, and I became the advertising manager of the LaSalle Extension University of Chicago. Everything went along beautifully for 1 year, at the end of which I was seized by a violent dislike for my job and resigned. I then entered the chain store business with the former president of the LaSalle Extension University and became the president of the Betsy Ross Candy Company. Unfortunate, or what seemed to me at the time to be unfortunate, disagreements with business associates disengaged me from that undertaking. The lure of advertising still was in my blood, and I tried again to give expression to it by organizing a school of advertising and salesmanship as a part of Bryant and Stratton Business College. The enterprise was sailing smoothly, and we were making money rapidly when the United States entered World War I. In response to an inner urge which no words can describe, I walked away from the school and entered the service of the United States government under President Woodrow Wilson's personal direction, leaving a perfectly sound business to disintegrate. On Armistice Day, 1918, I began the publication of the Golden Rule magazine. Despite the fact that I did not have a penny of capital, the magazine grew rapidly and soon gained a nationwide circulation of nearly 500,000, ending its first year's business with a profit of $3,156. Some years later, I learned from an experienced publisher that no man experienced in the publication and distribution of national magazines would think of starting such a magazine with less than $500,000 of capital.
For a proper perspective, $3,156 in 1918 would represent $45,000 today based on the Consumer Price Index average for each year compiled by the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, and $202,000 using the nominal GDP per capita tables. Not a bad profit for the first year in a magazine business when 80 to 90% of new titles fail, and even the successful ones take 3 to 5 years to become profitable.
The Golden Rule magazine and I were destined to part company. The more we succeeded, the more discontented I became, until finally, due to an accumulation of petty annoyances caused by business associates, I made them a present of the magazine and stepped out. Through that move, perhaps, I tossed a small fortune over my shoulder.
This was only the beginning of Hill's love for magazines. The Golden Rule was followed by his publication of the Napoleon Hill magazine. Later in life, he became the editor of Success, a magazine that is still published today.
Next, I organized a training school for salesmen. My first assignment was to train a sales army of 3,000 people for a chain store company, for which I received $10 for each salesman who went through my classes. Within 6 months, my work had netted me a little over $30,000. Success, as far as money was concerned, was crowning my efforts with abundance. Again, I became fidgety inside. I was not happy. It became more obvious every day that no amount of money would ever make me happy. Without the slightest reasonable excuse for my actions, I stepped out and gave up a business from which I might easily have earned a healthy salary. My friends and business associates thought I was crazy, and they were not backward about saying so. Frankly, I was inclined to agree with them, but there seemed nothing I could do about it. I was seeking happiness, and I had not found it. At least that is the only explanation I could offer for my unusual actions. What man really knows himself?
Again, I became fidgety inside. I was not happy. It became more obvious every day that no amount of money would ever make me happy. I could have written this about myself a few years ago. But when I took action by leaving a situation that, although financially rewarding, was no longer aligned with my personal mission, new doors of opportunity opened for me. It turned out to be the best decision of my professional life. Can you think of a time in your life when you made a difficult decision, but knew it was the right one, even when others questioned you?
That was during the late fall of 1923. I found myself stranded in Columbus, Ohio, without funds, and worse still, without a plan by which to work my way out of my difficulty. It was the first time in my life that I had actually been stranded because of lack of funds. Many times previously, I had found money to be rather shy, but never before had I failed to get what I needed for my personal conveniences. The experience stunned me. I seemed totally at sea as to what I could or should do. I thought of a dozen plans by which I might solve my problem, but dismissed them all as being either impractical or impossible of achievement. I felt like one who was lost in a jungle without a compass. Every attempt I made to work my way out brought me back to the original starting point. For nearly 2 months, I suffered with the worst of all human ailments, indecision. I knew the 17 principles of personal achievement, but what I did not know was how to apply them. Without knowing it, I was facing one of those emergencies of life through which, Mr. Carnegie had told me, men sometimes discover their other selves. My distress was so great that it never occurred to me to sit down and analyze its cause and seek its cure.
The worst of all human ailments, indecision. Have you ever felt paralyzed by indecision? This was the first major turning point in Napoleon Hill's life. His moving from job to job, seeking contentment in his own ideal professional life, sounds like many people today, people who are seeking contentment in their jobs and lives. Hill's predicament was, by his own admission, self-inflicted. However, he found himself in very much the same circumstances as someone today who has been negatively affected by the present economic situation. Hill took advantage of his temporary defeat, using it as a spur to force himself into thought and analysis to find his other self. If you have been dealt a blow by economic circumstances, you too can use it as a lever and motivation to find your other self.
Defeat is converted into victory. One afternoon, I reached a decision through which I found the way out of my difficulty. I had a feeling that I wanted to get out into the open spaces of the country, where I could get a breath of fresh air and think. I began to walk, and had gone 7 or 8 miles when I felt myself brought suddenly to a standstill. For several minutes I stood there, as if I had been glued to my tracks. Everything around me went dark. I could hear the loud sound of some form of energy which was vibrating at a very high rate. Then my nerves became quiet. My muscles relaxed, and a great calmness came over me. The atmosphere began to clear, and as it did so, I received a command from within, which came in the form of a thought, as near as I can describe it. The command was so clear and distinct that I could not misunderstand it. In substance, it said, "The time has come for you to complete the philosophy of achievement which you began at Carnegie's suggestion. Go back home at once and begin transferring the data you have gathered from your own mind to written manuscripts." My other self had awakened. For a few minutes, I was frightened. The experience was unlike any I had ever undergone before. I turned and walked rapidly until I reached home. As I approached the house, I saw my 3 little boys looking out of a window of our house at our neighbor's children, who were dressing a Christmas tree in the house next door. Then I recalled that it was Christmas Eve. Moreover, I recalled, with a feeling of deep distress such as I had never known before, that there would be no Christmas tree at our house. The look of disappointment on the faces of my children reminded me painfully of that fact. I went into the house, sat down at my typewriter, and began at once to reduce to writing the discoveries I had made concerning the causes of success and failure. As I placed the first sheet of paper in the typewriter, I was interrupted by that same strange feeling which had come over me out in the country a few hours before, and this thought flashed into my mind. Your mission in life is to complete the world's first philosophy of individual achievement. You have been trying in vain to escape your task, each effort having brought you failure. You are seeking happiness. Learn this lesson once and forever, that you will find happiness only by helping others to find it. You have been a stubborn student. You had to be cured of your stubbornness through disappointment. Within a few years from now, the whole world will start through an experience which will place millions of people in need of the philosophy which you have been directed to complete. Your big opportunity to find happiness by rendering useful service will have come. Go to work, and do not stop until you have completed and published the manuscripts which you have begun. I was conscious of having arrived at last at the end of life's rainbow, and I was happy.